Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is sort of what I was talking about with influencers. I used to do this where you sort of create busy work for yourself. So you'll make things to do. So you'll be like, I'm going to set up meetings and do things, because you feel like your time, every minute of your day between 9 and 5, should be filled with some sort of like task.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Balancing Acts. In this conversation, I talk to podcaster, influencer, writer, presenter, and comedian, Anoni. Perfect. Hello, I'm Steve Whiteley and welcome to Balancing Acts, a series of conversations with an array of creatives. We talk about their journey, the struggles they faced whilst progressing their career, strategies they use to unlock their creativity, how they balance their career with their personal lives, what impact this has had on their mental health, and lots more. Anoni's podcast, Adulting, has been downloaded over 3 million times. She has over 123,000 followers on Instagram, which she started off in 2015 to document her weight loss, and is now grown into a platform that acts as a hub for over 20-somethings. And she's created content about fitness, feminism, books, jewelry, politics, and everything in between. First of all, hello. It's been a while. And I guess you could say Balancing Acts has been on a hiatus. The last episode, you heard from me. I mentioned that I'd been in an accident. I got hit by a car while I was on my bicycle, and I claimed that everything was fine. But in hindsight, I think I may well have had concussion. In fact, I definitely did. So that was partly why there's been a bit of a gap between releasing this episode and the last. And secondly, I went gallivanting off to Madeira. My girlfriend and I, we fell wildly in love, and we decided to go and live and work remotely from there. So I went out there for a month and a half, and I did plan to record episodes, but I just ended up doing lots of writing, or at least staring at a screen, procrastinating. So that's the reasons why there's been a gap, but this is officially season two, and we kick it off in fine fashion with Anoni. I guess she's the first guest who is, I guess you could classify as an influencer, although she is obviously a lot more than that. She's a podcaster, as I've mentioned, and does a whole host of other things. But it was fascinating talking to her about her social media journey and how her content has changed as she's got older and her interests have varied. So yeah, this is a great one. If you're interested in upping your social media game, or you want to know the pros and cons to the life of an influencer, then this is the conversation for you. And as mentioned in the intro, Anoni has a very successful podcast, and we talk about that as well, and a wide variety of other topics. So without further ado, over to Anoni. Perfect. So in typical fine fashion, we started off having a good natter prior to recording. And I'm like, okay, well, we need to press record. We're already getting to the gold.
I know. I always think this, that you should actually just have the microphones running before people come in.
Yes. See, that is a sign of a pro. Do you ever, because obviously, you know, you're a seasoned podcaster. When you go onto other people's podcasts, are you sort of like taking notes or analyzing different styles and like, that's interesting. Well, I wouldn't do that.
Do you know what's so interesting? I just said that whole thing about, you know, having the microphones on, but I don't do that at all. I basically have like an hour long conversation and then think, shit. You need to do the podcast now.
Right.
So, one sec. Do I sound very echoey to you?
Yeah, I think I do as well. And
does this?
I think it's just, it's a bit reverby.
talking about analysing other people's podcasts, and then you very astutely picked up that there was a bit of a reverb issue. We're gonna hope for the best.
I think it's fine. I'm gonna have the headphones off because apparently I'm too much of a toddler and I can't deal with the sound.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel naked without the headphones on when I'm recording.
Do you feel like it's nothing's happening?
I'm just, there's always, there's a state of underlying panic.
Right.
That something might be going wrong.
I got the sense that you might be that kind of person when I arrived and you were telling me about the, having to have the spare mic, and yeah. I was nodding along. I'm just so laissez-faire with things. I'm surprised that I get anything done, yeah.
Okay, well, that's interesting because, I mean, I didn't really know where we were going to kick off exactly, but seeing as you said that, I was listening to something you said where you were talking about routine and structure. Because you do a lot. And at this particular moment, you were saying that you were really big on your daily and weekly structure. You have certain days for doing certain things. You get up at a certain point every day and you go to sleep at a certain point every day. Did lockdown fuck with that?
I was about to ask, which episode is this? How long ago is this?
Right, so I'm assuming the answer is yes.
Oh my God, it's completely changed. Like, this is kill. I recently had to read a book that my boyfriends were telling me to read for like 4 years because it's got so out of hand. It took me years to get to that structured point. I'm naturally...
What was the book, by the way?
It's called Atomic Habits by James Clear.
Oh, okay. You mentioned that on Instagram recently.
Yeah, I did. Because It was like, basically it got to this breaking point where I was like, I'm going to have to read that fucking book that Matt keeps telling me to read. And I didn't want to read it on principle because he'd recommended it so many times. And that annoys me when someone tells me what to do. So I wasn't ready. But I'm just so out of routine. And basically I'd spent years being the really disorganized one. I was never on top of my shit. And I would kind of rest on my laurels and get away with it. But I spent like post-uni really dedicated times being like, I'm going to be organized. And kind of like changing my natural... the homeostasis at how I want to do things. And then lockdown happened and slowly I just unlearn all of those good habits. And now I'm just like a reprobate.
So is the plan to get back to that peak performance stage?
A bit. I definitely, the irony being that there's not, now that everything's kind of loosened up and changed and we've realized that we don't have to be, I don't know, like so heavy handed with the way that we live our lives. There's almost no reason. This is the difficulty. Like, I would get up at 6 a.m. because I had a meeting at 9. So I had to get up at 6 if I wanted to go to the gym, whatever.
Okay.
And then without all of those sort of like pillars in place, I set my alarm. I'm like, realistically, what am I waking up for? Not that I've got nothing to do.
Yeah.
But everything's either like on Zoom or like my work has slowed down in terms of like the events. It's changing now. But like in the midst of lockdown, I had, I don't know, like half the workload.
Right.
And no incentive. So, because that's my boyfriend's opposite. He sort of naturally is in a routine. He could go to bed at 4 a.m. and be drunk and be up at 6 and be in the gym. That's like, he's type A.
I see.
And I remember once we had an argument and he was like to me, yeah, but that's because you hate being told what to do. You hate structure and you hate something else. And I was like, okay, I'm a toddler. That explains it. So
what type is that?
Toddler type.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Type T.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So yeah, oh, the reason you said that, sorry, I was saying laissez-faire. Yeah, sorry, I didn't stop talking. I was thinking about this actually on the way here because I was listening to Athena Cableno talking about her work and structure and things. And I've realized that for years I've always said, oh, I'm a perfectionist, because you know everyone says that.
Yeah.
I'm not. And I just want to have it on the record.
But I think that's really healthy to say, because I think it feels like a lot of pressure. There's constant pressure everywhere we look. And then when sometimes you look at someone on Instagram, and they're not necessarily, you don't get to really reveal or peek behind the curtain. You just see sort of like an outer image that they're portraying. And you're just like, how are they doing all of this? So when, you know, you do say, I am a bit shit sometimes. I think that's really helpful.
Oh, I agree. But then the irony being that, there's like a twofold thing with Instagram. Because on the one hand, you want to be like authentic and realistic and you don't want to make other people feel bad. But then, so that's the sort of the relatability aspect. But the other side of it is you're sort of meant to be aspirational. So people also do get pissed off if you're like, oh, I'm a bit out of whack with my routine or whatever. And then they're annoyed at you because you're like, they're like, well, what have you even got to do? I don't know. So you kind of can't. Yeah. The Instagram thing's a funny one. I'm a bit of a loggerheads at the minute because I don't really know how to tackle it in a meaningful way right now.
But I guess it must be quite precarious because I know you've sort of pivoted, to use that startup terminology. You've gone from sort of being a fitness influencer and now I sort of taken a more holistic approach as you've gone on. And now I also know you've got into comedy as well. And so some of your posts are lulls as well. And so is it hard because you'll have some followers who are with you from early days who might expect a certain type of content, and then you've got the the other people, as you're saying, who are looking for something more aspirational. And then sometimes you just want to have a laugh.
Yeah, exactly that. I think that, I built my platform with this kind of like fitness intention. And going into comedy is so interesting because on the one hand, I'm a really earnest, very sincere person. On my podcast, that's kind of like what I've got lots of parts of my personality, but I guess the part that's sort of always been visual has been like this earnest, sincere, always wanting to learn. And my Instagram page is sort of quite polished. It's fashion and clothes and like nails and things, which I think is almost like in direct opposition with what comedy is, which is normally messy and like the edges and the fringes of like your personality. So it's hard for me now when I'm doing these comedy gigs, like some people come and see me and I think, oh my God, they must be like, what the fuck is going on? Because when I do stand up, I'm a totally different person than who I am. I'm not a different person. It's just, I don't really show that side of myself as much.
So do you talk about your... do you talk about your life as an influencer in your stand-up?
Yeah, a lot of it at the minute, because I think it's quite, because initially when I first, like, well, I mean, I haven't been doing it for that long, but when I first started doing gigs, I was doing a lot of stuff about being posh in private school, because you kind of like have to say it and then people get over it because people get annoyed about it.
Yeah.
But I did one thing called Comedy Virgins, which is like loads of young, new, fresh comedians, 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was right at the end and it was me and a room of white guys, and every single guy that came on before me just talked about being posh and going to private school because everyone's trying to do the like Jack Whitehall thing.
Of course.
So I was like, fuck, I can't talk about this. It's just not interesting. It's not, the only reason I was talking about it as well is because people sort of want to be like, oh, you're posh and you go to private school. So like, if I say it, then it's sort of like, that's done with. So I started talking more about being an influencer because, as you said, there's a lot that people don't know about. And it's quite fascinating. And even the stuff about you saying, you know, how do they do it all? And you see these people being so productive and doing so much. My friend who like helped me get into comedy, Grace Campbell, we started off doing these sketches about how everyone on Instagram is like, oh my God, I'm so busy. It's just not true. Just no one's that busy. They, like, I used to do it. This is so bad, but I would wake up really early. And I genuinely thought I was really busy, but say I got up at 6, went to the gym, did all the stuff I had to. I'd be in bed having a nap by 11. Absolutely exhausting.
Have you heard of, there's this, you know, all these life coach gurus, there's a guy called Robin Sharma, and he's got a book called The 5 AM Club.
Right.
And embarrassingly, I was preaching about this. I think it is a good book, but when I was like in the midst of reading it, I was talking about it like it was the Bible, you know, on the podcast. And his whole thing is you get up at 5 AM and you do this like 20-20-20 rule, 20 minutes exercise, 20 minute meditation, 20 minute journaling, which I'm all for. And the idea is then your brain is at its most productive and creative in the morning. But the thing is, I find like midday, I was exhausted and I fall asleep. And the other thing I was like, is like, I have so many hours of days before, I don't know what to do.
I know.
That was the thing for me. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll change it to the 7 a.m. club. And then that turned into 8 a.m. No, I mean, I think on average, for me, 7, it feels 7-ish. Ish. I do like emphasize the ish.
Yeah, I think good. 7's lovely. 6 for me is a bit like I will be by 3 PM asleep.
Okay.
6, I don't like it, but I would do it if I... The problem is, well, I love going out. This is reality.
Right. So does your boyfriend still go up at 6 every day?
Every day without fail, no matter what we do, even on the weekends when we're having a lion.
So how does that affect things? Because like sometimes, you know, weekends you want to have a cozy little lion together, read the papers, or one of you, what if during the week you want to stay up? And he wants to go to bed early.
So what will happen is I'll be asleep. He'll go run like a half marathon or whatever he's doing on the weekend. Come back. Hatchell, get back into bed and then cuddle me. And it's 8 AM. I'm still not up. Okay. So that's what happens with that. It's so funny actually to have this argument. So I, on the going out front, I am one of those people who doesn't know when to go home. I could be having the worst evening of my life and I simply will not leave the night out. It's just pathological within me. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
And he said to me the other week, because I've got a really important meeting in the morning, so can you just make sure that you're back home early? So I got home at like 1 AM and I was like, so early. And then he woke up the next day and he's like, you're back so late. And I was like, what do you mean it's 1 AM? He was like, I said come back early. I was like, 1 is early. Late to me is 5 AM. If you're still out till 5-6, that's a late night. 1 AM to me, it's like perfect, amazing night. And so we do have we make it work, I guess, in the fact that we're both stubborn and we just do it, even though the other one's doing a different thing.
Right.
I'm still out at the point that he's waking up to go to work.
So I take it if he's got sort of like I wouldn't say 9 to 5, but he's got to get up at a certain time every day. Yeah. He's not in the influencer world.
No, not at all.
Is he then an influencer boyfriend? As in, does he have to hold the camera for you for a lot?
So he's got much better. He used to find it absolutely mortifying. He has a twin as well who'd always be trying to get him on boyfriends of Instagram. So if we were like out for a meal and Matt was taking a picture of him, you would have Lewis behind Matt trying to take a picture of him, taking a picture of me. So that terrified him because he's not really that active on Instagram. And now he's got so much better that he'll be taking pictures of me, and to the point where I'm getting awkward because I'm like, okay, we've done like 500 now. And he's like, oh, I don't care anymore. He's like lost the shame. But I guess I don't I don't do like proper shoots and things. It'll just be like if we're out and about and I'm like, oh, I like my outfit. He'll take a picture.
Right.
Yeah. I don't really do like content days and things. So okay. It's not, he's not heavily involved.
Right. So as we touched on earlier, you've gone through these different stages of creating content. Do you ever look back? Because I found this recently, I used to make sketches on YouTube and some of them I might look at now and think, I don't know if I would have done that. Now, none of them were offensive in any shape or form, but you know, your tastes change as you hopefully evolve, right? So when you look back at some of your older posts, is there any sense of like, oh, like cringe or anything like that? Or are you totally on board with like, no, that was me then and this is me now and I'm completely proud of what I did back there and I'm not in any shape or form gonna try and hide any of that kind of content?
I don't know. I think I've cringed more at some of the earlier podcasts, I think.
Okay.
Just because it's so vulnerable, I think, talking. I don't know, it makes me cringe. I have archived some of my old posts on Instagram of fitness, only because there was loads of like before and afters, yeah, like weight loss stuff. And I was like, I kind of don't want this to be my legacy. And also like, not that I ever want to be in the Daily Mail, but say something happened where I did end up having like a big profile.
Yeah.
You know the Daily Mail will just be loving that.
Yeah, yeah.
Shit. So I did kind of get rid of, I mean, there were just millions of Belfies. So many. Do you know what a Belfie is?
No, just
a bum selfie.
See the look of confusion.
This is a very like 2015 thing.
Right.
So you kind of do like the fitness influencer bum twist thing. It's just pictures of girls in thongs. Yeah. I had loads of those. So I archived some of those because I was like, not what I'm trying to do. But I don't really know. I guess I don't think I've done such like a round about the houses to get to where I am. And doing comedy for me makes the most sense and the podcast out of everything I've done.
Yeah.
But I would probably have never have got there if I hadn't done the fitness stuff to begin with.
Yeah. I mean, also from a sense of, you know, being vulnerable and sharing and being so open and sharing, that will probably allow you to, I'd imagine, be braver with your comedy because part of the challenges when you're doing comedy is like, well, one is sort of finding your voice, but two, you know, how open and brave you going to be about your life. So if you're already used to that, then I would imagine that might be helpful in some sense.
That is definitely, I think what's so interesting with the comedy thing, and it's something that I'm noticing on my platform at the minute, which is what I was saying about the polish thing, is sort of, I'm not a messy person, but I'm like on Instagram, you get this, it depends what avenue you take, but because of where I started, it's to do with health and fitness, it tends to be that you're looked up as quite like a responsible person.
Yeah.
And I am responsible. My podcast is very responsible. Whereas in the comedy, I'm starting to sort of like flesh out those bits of me that are a bit messy and like, the inconsistencies and the hypocrisies, and Instagram as a platform, I mean, what's that saying? Like, the internet is where nuance goes to die. Like, you can't, the things I would say on stage, if I wrote them on an Instagram cancer, I'd probably get cancelled.
Right.
So that's a really fun thing to play with. But like, I did a joke, which I thought was really funny the other day, like a reel of me having a cigarette with a friend. And I was like, I've quit vaping. And I just thought it was quite funny. And I sometimes do have a cigarette when I'm drunk. Or not. And oh my God, my audience was so angry at me. They're like, this is glamorizing smoking. And I was like, this is fascinating because I understand. But on the one hand, I really need to rip that plaster off and let people understand that, you know, we can't be expecting people on the internet to sort of live by our moral values. It's very moralizing being on Instagram and stuff. And I guess like I'm 27 now and I was younger when I started. So I was very quick to appease. I guess I'm getting older and I'm just like, oh, I can't be everything to everyone all the time.
You were quick to appease in what sense?
So if someone was like, oh, you've done this wrong, which is great, and I love being called in about things, but I would sort of immediately apologize and take things down and be like, oh my God, I will never do that again, to the point where you're almost molded into a different sense.
Would that cause you anxiety when you would receive those posts or comments on your posts in that sense? Would there be, sort of a reaction like, oh shit, I need to apologize or I need to take this down? And would it sort of stay with you mentally?
So I never used to feel anxious because I was so quick to be like, oh my God, of course I'm wrong, and just sort of like accept it. And I even used to like post it on my story, like, look where I went wrong. And then one day, like in the pandemic, I did a post about how I used to be like really addicted to fitness. I did this post about how I haven't really been going to the gym that much. And I'm so proud of myself for not caring because it's like an amazing thing to get out of that routine and feeling like you have to go.
Yeah.
But the accommodating picture was one where I thought it looked quite good in the mirror. And I was just getting so many people being really angry at me, being like, but you look like you're still in shape. And it was just kind of turned this whole sort of like censoring, basically being like, you shouldn't be talking about this because even though you feel good about it, like you look too lean to be, it's very confusing.
Right.
And it was the first time that I've ever not gone, oh my God, I'll take it down, I'm so sorry to Fanny. I just went, look, this is, I can't really do anything about that. I don't know what you want me to say. And I was kind of talking about it on my stories a bit, and I can't explain to you like the level of animosity people were sending. It was just the weirdest thing. I think people are bored online anyway at the minute. And I've kind of taken a turning point since then where I just thought, oh, I cannot make everyone happy all the time, which is the position that I was at before, where I would just sort of be like, I will do anything to make sure that everyone feels sort of comfortable in my page. And now I'm like, that's good to an extent, but it comes to the point where it's like the detriment of your own sense of self.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. And I guess there's definitely a sense of strength that comes with that. You know, if you sort of get to a point, you're like, actually, no, I'm not going to adapt. This is me. Take it or leave it. I imagine there's going to be an acclimatization period where it's going to get a bit tricky. But over time, you might lose some followers, but the ones that remain are going to really appreciate your authenticity.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's like growing pains. I think that's where I'm at the minute, because I'm like really, I really want to properly do this comedy thing. And it's scary because it's kind of like, so it's so different to the world that I'm in, because it really does mean that I'm just going to have to, one, being on Instagram means that lots of people are very kind to you and they love you and they sort of fawn after you, and I can get audiences at comedy shows who laugh at all of my jokes. And I'm like, am I funny?
Yeah.
Or have you followed me on Instagram for 5 years and so just love everything I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So comedy...
It's good that you're aware of that, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been doing other little like gigs, like Comedy Store and bits like that, and I've got like a few coming up, and I did like a gay night recently where it was the most amazing gay bar, but the crowd wasn't being that good for the people before me, and I was like, this is going to be the night that I die. Like, this is I can't wait. I like need this to happen. It's like a great environment for people to not laugh. Unfortunately, they thought it was really funny.
Okay,
so it still hasn't happened yet, but I'm like, it's funny because I guess it's so different in that it's a nice thing in that when you have an Instagram audience, I can't explain it to you, people think because you have a following that you're someone.
Yeah.
And that in a funny sense means that you don't really know what people think, because it's like, do you really enjoy what I'm doing, or is it just because there's a number against my Instagram platform? Whereas in comedy, you're bare. Like, it doesn't really matter who you are. You just have to make people laugh.
You just have to be funny. Yeah. That's it. Either you're funny or you're not funny.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. There's something about it that I just like it more. I don't know if that even made sense.
No, I guess maybe what you're saying is there's a sense of purity in comedy that you don't find in the world that you've come from.
Yeah, I guess so. And it makes sense to me. I've always loved comedy, but I never really knew that it was like a job.
Yeah, I was the same. I had no clue.
But anything like that, I kind of like, I was always into like drama and singing and acting at school. And then I sort of was like, those are my hobbies. I never really, even though I did, I remember I auditioned for Skins when I was like, because we lived near Bristol. But I don't really remember thinking that it was like, I don't really know what I thought. It's only literally now that my friend, I said to my friend who's a comedian, like in 2019, she's doing a show and I was like, oh, I really want to do comedy. She's like, come and do 5 minutes at my thing. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I literally have had the bug since then. And then we went into lockdown. So
yeah, and it will do that to you. You get the bug. Were you doing Zoom gigs?
No, I haven't got that far. I don't think, I'm not ready for that yet.
I did one and then.
Is it devastating?
I mean, I just had, you know what you were saying before, I had bad Wi-Fi connection. my mic just sort of drooped down, and at the time they hadn't worked out how to unmute everybody, and so you'd just be performing to a wall of silence.
Yeah,
not just a wall of silence, but just see these faces, these square faces in these little squares staring at you, and that was enough to put me off.
I just don't think I could do it. I don't really understand how you do it without the audience interaction.
Yeah, I think it's evolved now, and now, you know, you are hearing laughter, which is essential for
the fragile
ego of the
comedian. Are you sure they were on mute?
Yeah, I think that's why I'm no longer doing stand-up.
Okay.
I've got so many questions for you. We've been going on a fluid conversation, just because I'm fascinated how you've managed to take like such a multifaceted approach. And I know you were saying before about, you know, you're kind of taking more of a laissez-faire attitude, but like, for instance, you did this, I don't know if you're still doing it, but I know last year you committed to reading a book a week and reviewing it. Did you manage to do it all year through?
No, I commit to this every year.
Did this last one week?
No, I think last year did 30-something.
Okay.
38 or something. And this year I'm
30
on
is good.
22 or 3, I think. So okay. I say I'm going to read a book a week, which I do for the first like 2 months.
Right.
And then because I've said I've got to do it, I still keep going. I doubt I'll make it to 52 because that is quite hard.
Yeah. How are you picking your books?
It's quite random, actually. Like, I used to not read nonfiction at all because I don't know if it's my ego, but I don't like being told what to do in general. And sometimes I feel like reading a nonfiction book is like conceding to the fact that you like need help.
Okay.
So, and yeah, it's such a back, but now I love it. Now I started reading them, I absolutely love them. But yeah, there was something about it. Also, I think because I did a degree in English literature, and I always love books, and I've mm-hmm. it's probably me being a bit of a snob, thinking that, you know, you can learn from fiction because you've got to draw it out yourself. So it's probably just me being a twat. But yeah, I've got more into nonfiction. I just kind of, there might be a recent book that I really want to read. So like, I do a book club as well.
Yeah.
And I've got one coming up on the 3rd of September. We're going to be reading How to Kill Your Family by Bella Mackey, which has been very well reviewed. And it's a new book. So that was just an intrigue that I wanted to read that fiction.
And then so for the book club, tell me about how that whole works. So you invite a guest on each week to talk about a book, or?
So the book club is in real life, IRL. Yeah. So it started actually just before I'd moved to London. I was still living at home with my parents. I had a broken leg. I'd just finished uni. And I was talking about how in the gym doing box jumps.
Wow, okay.
And I thought, I heard the crack, but I thought I dropped my headphones on the floor. So I just walked and sat on this bench and waited for my dad to pick me up. And I was literally just, I didn't even feel, I was talking about this with my friend the other day. It must have been adrenaline. Okay. I couldn't feel it until I got to the hospital and they were like, you fractured it in three places. And then I screamed.
Right.
And then I was on, I did a whole tank of gas now, and that was great fun.
That's always fun.
That's always good fun. Yeah. So I was talking about how I just wanted a group of like-minded women to talk about like interesting things, maybe books. I'd love to have a book club. So I just made a Facebook page. And I was doing Instagram at this time, but I wasn't the same audience as I have now, like size-wise. And I just made a Facebook group, and I was like, well, if anyone wants to come, let's all put £5 in a kitty, we'll buy some food, we'll go to a pub, and we'll just talk about a book.
Okay.
So that's what we did initially, and there was like 50 of us, and we just went to, I can't remember what pub it was in, somewhere in Kennington, I think, actually. And I actually think Greg Davis was in the pub when we walked past randomly.
Okay.
So that was the first one, and then I started doing it at like other pubs. Then it started working in venues, and now it's at the Albright, and you get like catered food, and you get a goodie bag, and it's like...
You've gone posh.
It's gone posh, yeah. It's on the 6th floor of the Mayfair Albright, and it's pretty chic.
Great.
You get a glass of wine, a goodie bag, and like an amazing meal. And then everyone just gets absolutely wasted by the end.
It's great when you say that's what I think I found fascinating, that you've built like a community of sorts. Mm. That's what it feels like. And I know that sounds like a bit of a cliche, but, and also you've managed to combine your love of books and wine at these events.
Yes.
Talk to me about the wine. How much of a wine head are you?
So I don't know how much research you've done, but my name literally translates to wine woman. Did you find this out?
Yeah.
So, I just used to like wine like anyone likes wine. And then my boyfriend's family often go on wine tasting holidays.
Okay.
So I've gone with them. But during lockdown, it kind of got a bit prolific. So we were ordering so many cases of Majestic and stuff. And then we were doing wine tastings on Zoom with his brother-in-law, who's really into wine as well.
Okay.
And it's got to the point where I'm actually not a nice person when it comes to wine. As in I would... not like a cheap wine, which is not a cheap wine,
right?
But
your taste buds have become
too much. It's not nice.
So you can pick up the taste.
Yeah, well, I could tell you. Yeah.
All right. So let's just we're doing a wine tasting.
Okay.
This is wine tasting. You've got a nice glass of, I don't know, red. I'm not going to give away my amateur knowledge of wine. Jacob's Creek. No. It's a bottle of red of your choosing.
Okay.
Describe to me the glass of red. Yeah, and all its sort of, you know, tonalities and so forth. Just so next time I confronted by a waiter who asked me to taste the wine, I have something to say.
Okay. So first thing you want to do is you've got a swirl on the table, gently, to release all the smells.
Yeah.
Then you sniff.
Yeah.
And then you sip. And then when you sip, you've got to go...
Right.
To get the flavour out.
Okay. Right, okay. You have
and
to
then there's the things that you're tasting for are tannins.
Yes.
And tannins are the things that make your mouth go... Have you ever had a slow berry or something that makes the mouth like that?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
So. Yeah.
So that's your tannins.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you have your body. So if it's really full bodied, it's a thicker and it's got more flavours. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a lighter wine, which I like a Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
That's not as full bodied.
Big fan of that. Malbec. I like the Malbec.
Malbec's really smooth.
Very smooth. Yeah.
So it doesn't have it doesn't have tannins. It's not very acidic. And that's I also prefer that kind of thing. But sometimes if you have a younger wine, it'll be very tannic, very acidic, and a bit sharper.
Okay.
What else is there to say about the wine? Sometimes you have a long finish. Mm-hmm. So I like a white Burgundy.
Okay.
Which is a nice Chardonnay. And that's normally quite oaky and buttery. And sometimes that has a nice long finish, which just means after you sip it, you get a nice... And it could be floral, it could be fruity.
This is great.
Woody, oaky. I'm going to feel like you've learned a lot.
So sophisticated. Do you drink to get drunk or do you drink to enjoy the flavour and taste?
Both.
Okay.
So I drink to like a nice, I love going to like a really nice wine bar with my boyfriend or with friends and like actually kind of like buying it by the glass and like having it with meats and cheeses and doing like quite a chic evening.
Yeah.
But I do also go out and get wasted.
Get smashed. Do you find, do you have like any internal conflicts with the idea of that? And then your approach to self-mastery and so forth.
Wait, what's my conflict? Sorry.
As in like coming from your fitness background, you know, and the lifestyle associated with that. Do you ever feel that there's any, do you have any conflicts? So I'll give you an example from my perspective. I'm big on meditation and that kind of thing. And so I guess sometimes I used to drink loads. I don't drink as much now. But even sometimes if I get drunk now, I sometimes feel guilty for it.
Right.
I feel like a sense of guilt. Oh, am I betraying my beliefs of some sort? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I think that I think you're going to talk about balance later, but I think that I've gone through so many extremes where like, I was like the most unhealthy person. I used to smoke 20 a day, I'd eat Domino's every day, get pick and mix and never do any exercise. And that was like me when I was like sort of
18. Can't go
18.
Wrong with eating Domino's.
No, but every day I think it is a bit extreme.
Were you actually doing it every day?
Oh my God. And we used to get double McDonald's. So we got McDonald's in town and then there was a McDonald's next to our hall. So we have one in the taxi on the way home and then one to eat in bed. So it was like, it was just like gluttony upon cigarettes upon vodka. And then I went the other way and sort of like got extremely lean, dieting loads, never drunk, never went out. And then I have been drinking more since April 12th, 2021. I would say that my drinking has gone up exponentially because
lockdown,
coming out of lockdown. Yeah. So that's kind of, I'm not feeling any guilt at the minute, but come September, I am sort of going to try and rein it in. But I mean, all of my friends have sort of been like, every time we're like, should we go out? And then we're like, we never know, maybe there'll be another pandemic. And it's just excuse upon excuse. I guess I am, as much as I say I go out and get wasted, I also am quite good at, I do exercise regularly, I eat well, and I feel like I look after my mental health in other ways. The drinking is probably the thing where I'm the most lax, but I just love, I love dancing and I love going out.
Yeah.
So I don't, yeah, I don't think I do, fine. I don't think like I feel guilty. I think, oh, sorry.
No, go for it.
I would feel bad, and I do really think about this consciously because I think alcoholism is such a big thing, and I know so many people, family, like people's family members and people in my life who've got to the point with alcohol or drugs where it's become, it's veered off into an addiction or something unhealthy.
Yeah.
So I'm conscious of that in that I would never want to be drinking constantly, and I do make sure I have breaks from it, and that's something I really think about. But in terms of like just going out and letting loose with my girlfriends, I don't feel bad about it the next day. But I am, in the back of my mind, I do think, let's make sure that alcohol doesn't become something that is, because it can happen to anyone, and I think that's worrying.
Yeah, I think people use it for whatever different reasons, don't they? So there's that that old adage of, you know, using creatives using it, writers using it, it's almost romanticized.
I know. When I read those, you know, read about like old poets and stuff, it does kind of make you want to smoke opium, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. That's why I always keep a stash by my bed.
Yeah, got to.
You know, you never know.
Go to like little opium den. I remember reading Ruby and the Smoke by Philip Pullman years ago. Have you ever read that?
No.
When I was at school, I used to think this sounds absolutely amazing. And it was, they were in opium dens.
Yeah. I mean, I've experimented with lots of drugs, but no, opium isn't one of them.
No.
Try it. Have you been tempted, or have you ever done sort of the likes of ayahuasca or anything like that?
No, but so funny you asked. I love Simon Amstel, and I know that he famously talks about it. And he was actually on Off Menu the other day talking about how we have a culture of like booze in the UK, and he was saying, as someone that gets depressed, you know, it's so tempting to drink, but it's like a depressant, so you shouldn't. And he's really into shrooms, which I know is like all the rage. I haven't actually tried them, but I would try shrooms. And it's like a massive investor thing. It's called psilocybin. Have you heard about? Are you investing that? You're looking like you're.
Yeah.
Are you in on that?
No, I mean, I have. I mean, it's something I've thought about. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole microdosing trend in Silicon Valley and beyond, where you've got like these tech entrepreneurs who will just take, you know, microdose throughout the day, not just on psilocybin, but also acid as well. I did that. I got an acid spray. I tried doing that before writing, and I just...
And what happened?
I just felt very loose.
Right. Would you recommend?
Yeah. I think, you know, everything in moderation, kids. Perfect. Hello, sorry to interrupt in the middle of this insightful conversation, which I'm enjoying, I'm sure, just as much as you are. But I need to give you guys a little reminder. If you like this conversation, this episode, if you like balancing acts in general, then please do subscribe to us, rate and review us, because it makes the world of difference. And the more reviews we get, the more rates we get, the more people can discover the podcast and we can make it go viral, whatever that means. Okay, back to the chat. Yeah, I did one or two sprays and it just felt quite loose. I don't know if I have, like, I feel my brain is quite chaotic anyway.
Mm.
And I don't know if I want to add to the chaos, if that makes
sense. Take it down a bit. Yeah. It's interesting we're talking about this. I was talking about with a friend and we were talking about podcasting, and we were saying how much we want to talk about drugs because there's such a big drug culture in the UK and everyone knows it. And even the recent like NHS advert that's telling people to get the vaccine, like one of the scenes they use on it is so you can go out with your friends and they're quite obviously at a rave where I assume people would be taking drugs. And we were like, it's so funny because everyone just acts like drugs don't exist. And yeah, then it's at like the fringe of the society. And I was like, I just wish people would talk about it. And also in a way that's like, if you're listening and you haven't done drugs, there's ways to be safe about, not that I go out and take drugs all the time, but, you know, like get test kits. I just feel like we have to like little disclaimers about being safe around drugs.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean,
I don't know if they just need to.
Yeah, if you're looking over at the US and the way that they've started to legalize marijuana, I do think it's interesting. I mean, I haven't seen the full stats. I can't speak, you know, from an informed position. But I have read this book by this guy called Gabor Mate. He's amazing.
Someone was talking about this the other day, I think.
Yeah, it's Hungry Ghosts. It's about addiction. He talks about his experiences of being this physician at this clinic in Canada, in Vancouver. And they got huge, high rates of addiction over there. And I've lost my trail of thought now.
You were talking about, sorry, that you hadn't seen the results of doing like legalizing.
Yes, his whole, basically he was saying, to cut a long story short, is that if they legalize drugs, people are going to be able to do, say, class A drugs in a much safer environment.
Yeah.
It's going to prevent a lot of deaths, a lot of diseases, which will have a knock-on effect in terms of expenditure on healthcare, etc. But they'll be able to take more preventative measures.
Are they talking about legalizing or decriminalizing? Is it decriminalizing and then you can sort of like regulate the market?
Decriminalizing, which is what they've done now for marijuana. Yeah. And
Marijuana is like legal to buy, isn't it? Because you can literally go into a shop and buy.
Go into a shop,
whereas I think decriminalizing is like, it's still not legal, but you don't get a prison sentence. So it's not like you can't go and get coke in your corner shop.
Yeah.
Because that, I actually think, isn't helpful.
No, coke specifically is not,
no,
not helpful at all.
I think like, yeah, the psychedelics, which actually I haven't really experimented with, but I would love to. I think that there's definitely an element of that. Like every famous songwriter in from history is always like taking acid or...
Yeah, there's definitely
so maybe that'll be my next thing.
That'll be the next thing.
Yeah.
Just dropping some acid. I hope I haven't, you know, had a bad negative impact on you. Now you're going to go away and your whole life is going to unravel as a result of this podcast.
No, it's fine. I'm fascinated. I didn't know you could get acid spray. I'm assuming that's not legal though.
I mean, I didn't get it. A friend of a friend. And I just sampled it. But yeah, yes. Talking of sort of mind expansion and that side of
neat
things.
Neat segue, yeah.
Are you into meditation or anything along those lines? Or maybe in your world, I guess it's termed as mindfulness.
So, right. I really should meditate. And I have got a really good friend of mine, Shinova, she talks really, really well about meditation. Every time I talk to her about it, I think I'm going to go and meditate. And I haven't, and I should. I guess my...
Why do you think you should?
Because I really think it would help me. You know, you said you have like a chaotic brain.
Yeah.
I feel
like you have a... You may have one, but I feel like you have a high-functioning chaotic brain. You get shit done.
I think that's true. I actually started therapy, which is the most amazing thing.
I was going to talk to you about that.
So last October. And it was kind of what my therapist said to me. She was like... Because I've never... It'll bring the tone down, but I felt a bit depressed in the lockdown. I've never really felt like that before. And she was like, it's so funny because obviously this is normal, but I'll come to her and be like, I'm really, really depressed. But I'm like, the thing is, materially for me, nothing changed. I still keep going.
Yeah.
So I almost wanted to be so depressed that I was bed bound, because then I would be like, oh, I'm depressed. But
right.
But it was sort of like hard to, everyone's different as well. It manifests with different people.
I know what you mean. It's sometimes hard to know whether you... Oh, is this depression?
Yeah, I just hate everything and I don't really want to do anything and I just like... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was like, but I'm getting up and I'm doing everything. And she was like, well, also, I'm not diagnosed with depression, but she was like, you're obviously going through a period where you feel quite depressed. I mean, I don't want to get that terminology wrong. But I think my brain is sometimes at odds with what I think my perception of myself. So yeah, I think I am quite productive and ambitious and all of this, but I don't realise that, if that makes sense.
Is that because you're hard on yourself and you have very high expectations of yourself?
Maybe, partly yeah. That. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's funny. And I think it's also a cultural thing of where, say I did a job similar to my boyfriend's or someone where like you've got to be sat at a desk all day and your hours are sort of numbered and there's a production of work that has to be done and at the end of the year you get a bonus. Like everything that I do is sort of, some of it is just, I might just be sitting, staring for like 2 hours really thinking about something to do with work.
Yeah.
And in a funny way, that is productivity and that is work, but you can't quantify it in the same way.
Yeah.
So I think that this is sort of what I was talking about with influencers. I used to do this where you sort of create busy work for yourself. So you'll make things to do. So you'll be like, I'm going to set up meetings and I do things because you feel like your time every minute of your day between 9 and 5 should be filled with some sort of like task.
But do you think that is due to the burden of having to constantly self-generate? You're responsible for your own income sources, right?
Yes.
So there's almost a sense of guilt attached to the idea of yourself. I'm just going to take it easy today. Because you go, well, if I don't, then if I do that, if I don't work, then I might not be getting X amount of money in which it's going to pay the rent off or whatever.
I don't think it's about taking it easy. I think it's genuinely about like what people see as work because...
Okay, yeah.
So it's more like I would still be doing all the things. I just basically really taught myself now to recognize when something is work rather than thinking it's play. So for instance, I don't know, doing the podcast, I would almost see that as a bit of fun. I'm just sitting down to chat with someone for like an hour.
Yeah.
Nothing that I do has ever really felt like a chore.
Okay.
And especially when I do my book clubs and things, like I don't get paid for that. People just pay for the tickets and that covers the cost of the event. But I'm there for like 5 hours. I'll end up staying for hours and hours. And one day my manager was like, you know, you don't have to like stay with them. I'm having a fab time.
Yeah.
She was like, if someone employed you to do an event for 5 hours, you'd be getting paid whatever by the hour.
Yeah.
But my brain never goes, this is all your job. It's like you're just having fun all the time. So, yeah.
But that's great though, isn't it? I mean, that's the dream, isn't
it? It's the dream. But then for some reason I feel a huge guilt that I'm like, I should be like stressed and, you know, like,
right.
And feeling like it's really hard. And I don't feel that, which is a huge privilege, but I almost like self-flagellate in order to make up for the fact that I'm having such a good time.
You feel guilty for not feeling guilty.
I feel guilty for enjoying my job, is the truth.
But don't you think you just some point, okay, because this is something else I wanted to touch upon, okay? I've written down this very professional notes here, by the way.
Very good.
So for instance, you're very passionate about food waste, which I think, you know, is great. And fast fashion.
Food waste? Where's that from?
Reducing food waste.
Okay.
Reducing food waste.
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
I care about it. I wouldn't be like,
you're not like,
it's my number one thing.
Okay. I guess what...
What, like, what made you think about the food waste thing? Because I get odd box.
Yeah.
Is that why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. But I think that's quite...
It's a good odd box.
Yeah, but I think it's quite a generic thing, isn't it? Like not wanting to throw your food away. Do you just throw everything in the bin? You like, fuck that shit. I just buy extra veg and pop it in the bin.
Sometimes my timings are terrible.
Really?
So sometimes I'll bulk buy food.
Oh, yeah.
And then I might go out for a few days and then some of the food's gone off. And I
know
that's terrible.
You have to really plan with veg. You have to really know where it's going.
I'm a terrible planner.
Also, and he talks about this in Atomic Habits, but making sure it's in a part of the fridge you can see it. Because this is what I used to do. I used to put cucumbers like right at the back of the drawer.
Yeah.
With all the veg and then just completely forget it was there. And then you'd find it like 3 months later. Really awful state.
Yeah.
So it's all about like making it visible. Also, meal planning is good, but not like making it, but just in your mind thinking.
So do you do that every week?
No. So we just when we go to shop. So my boyfriend actually does the shops, but I will, you know, encourage the shopping, and we'll kind of say like, what are we going to have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So we just do 3 days shopping, and then 3 days, and then we know. And if I'm out or he's out, then we'll only buy enough for that night. But we'll think, oh, maybe we'll have a green Thai curry on Monday.
Okay.
And then Tuesday we'll do that nice prawn salad thing, and then you've literally only got enough for the meals that you're going to have.
Yeah, that's. It's a lot of planning. It's something...
It is. But
it's worth doing, isn't it?
That's him being type A, because what I would do is probably what you were saying you do, where you go around and you're like, wow, look at all this beautiful like spinach and stuff. I'm going to buy that. And then I just buy anything with no view of what it was going to make. And then just, yeah. So
will you almost set out recipes and then you buy ingredients for those recipes?
I just have do you not have like a roster of recipes in your head that we go through kind of phases? So there was a point where we make this thing called chicken bang bang that my sister's fiance used to make. That's just like sweet chili chicken thighs with like Hasselback potato. And we literally obsessed with that. So we'd have that on rotation with like a green Thai curry and a fajita dish.
Yeah.
Do you have this in your brain or not?
It's like, I know what it is.
It's it's like we're like the HelloFresh recipe people. Like I have like a log of, we don't look things up in a book. We just sort of have our own little log.
It's impressive.
And then every now and then you add a new one.
I've been cooking I've got sort of bog standard recipes and I've been cooking them for years and I still have to go through the recipe book.
Really?
I think so. I mean, sometimes I'll foray off them. But it's like, you know what? It's like the same thing before what I said about having to get the spare mic in case this one breaks down. I'm anxious that I might get the recipe wrong.
So I'm the opposite. I will, again, recipes annoy me. I would almost on purpose change it just for the sake of being difficult.
But then that seems to tie in what you're talking before about your boyfriend wanting to have sort of a very, you know, structured routine and you kind of want to be headstrong, do your own thing. Well, that's your personality
type. It is my personality. And I hate that. And I used to really want to not be this person that I am. But so like cooking wise, if it's a chili con carne, for instance, I will just add in anything. I'll be like, put a bit of chocolate in there, which is actually very good. You should do that balsamic glaze, red wine, whatever. And I'll just won't do the same recipe ever, but it's kind of the same.
Okay.
But that works in some senses. I might make you the best chili con carne you've ever had. But if it's like a specific recipe, I can't remember who it is. What are the really Mob Kitchen do an amazing like chicken katsu curry? Okay. And I used to think when my boyfriend and I started going out that I was the better cook.
Yeah.
But because he follows a recipe to a T, it literally looks exactly like it does on the recipe book. And it's much better than my avant-garde cooking.
Yeah.
Which is upsetting. Do you see what I mean?
I see. But yours is more creatively fulfilling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean,
so maybe I do care about food waste. You were right.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I think so. I think we've touched upon something you weren't aware of before. No. So it's been useful for you as well as me.
Thank you.
I guess what I was getting at is that I suppose as part of your podcast, right, you're interviewing lots of different people. And I think it's great because you're expanding your mind, all these different subject matters, right, by having these different guests. You touched on before about feeling guilty for feeling guilty, right? And I know you've talked about, say, your privilege, okay? Do you ever get a sense of like overwhelm where you feel like you've constantly got to educate yourself and re-educate yourself and you're worried about potentially slipping up for saying something? I know we talked about this in terms of your some of your followers might comment on a post and say, well, that's not the sort of, you know, the person that I know, that's not the person that I followed. But I guess more in terms of the educating yourself on certain subject matters, do you ever find it's exhausting? You're just like, I can't be honest with this.
So I actually never get bored of the learning side of things because I'm a naturally curious and inquisitive person. So like I will spend, if I've got internet on the tube, I'll end up just reading loads of articles. Like I find that really fun. What I found that I don't enjoy as much anymore is sort of the need to commentate on things and the need to insert my opinion.
Why do you think that's changed?
Because I think that there was a point where I thought that my voice was really important, especially like not in a I felt I had a responsibility on certain things to talk about wild issues, but it's got to the point now where that's sort of in of itself spiraled and it's become its own thing on social media. You know how everyone makes like sort of these infographics and things?
Yeah.
And after a while, I was like, oh, this has gone from a bit where lots of people really cared and really were trying to like make a difference by talking out to lots of people sort of just... not, I don't want to say virtue signaling, but I think like
it's fashionable, right?
It's kind of like a culture, it's like a commentary culture. And I've just gone, actually, at this point, I'm just going to step away and not talk about everything. And I've learned that like within my friends and within like people that know me, I know where my values are and I know that they all respect me and what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm less pressed about proving to other people that I like obviously care about what's going on in Afghanistan right now, but I haven't spoken about it because I'm suddenly like, do you know what? If I don't post that same infographic that 6 million other people have posted, doesn't mean that I'm not reading about it. And I think it's more the expectation of showing up or whatever the thing is. It's like, it's the exact same as what I was saying before. I guess they're just feeling less beholden to worrying about other people's opinions.
That's quite freeing, quite liberating.
It's really liberating. And I had a really good conversation with Jason Akandaya, who's like a black gay journalist who does incredible writing. And I love everything that he writes. He's writing a book at the moment, actually. And one of my last episodes was with him. And it was so funny because the podcast almost come full circle. Because it started off about all the things we didn't learn in school. And a lot of it ended up being about privilege and identity politics and culture and all those things. And one of the episodes with him, he was like, we've done it. We've spoken about privilege at the end of the day. He was like, you standing up and being like, I'm a white, cis, het, able-bodied, neurotypical white middle class whatever else woman, he was like, doesn't do anything anymore. Like the sort of the saying it part, we've done that. I don't think we need to do that anymore. Yeah. He was like, it's just boring, it's just identity politics and it's just like hammering the same point home. Yeah. He was like, I think the conversation can move on now.
Okay.
And that's sort of where I feel it's like it was interesting up until a point, but I think the information is out there now.
Yeah,
we've had these conversations and I think that it's more like putting it into practice in terms of how we all live and rather than sort of explaining. It's been a very like growing up process. It was like I learned all those things and I'm like, okay, that sort of means of doing things isn't where I'm at anymore. Does that
it makes complete sense. And I guess that's what, you know, we were talking about earlier, the challenge of not growing up, but like, you know, kicking off with as a profile on social media and having released, you know, having a track record of releasing certain types of content, and now you're changing in a different direction. You're almost like a prisoner to that historical content and the way that you might have approached certain subject matters. And now you're kind of like, well, actually, no, I'm at this stage of my life and I'm sort of distancing myself from that. And that's okay. And for normal people, not that you're not normal, but for people, let's say, who don't have like a profile, right, or a following, normal is weirdos. Not the right word. I'm the weirdo.
I am.
That's right. But for people like that, they can do it behind closed doors. So, you can voice certain subject matters around the dinner table, for instance. Yeah. And then you get to a point where you're like, actually, am I annoying everyone?
Yeah.
I'm going to stop now. And it's only those people around you that are affected. But when you've got a big following, it's a completely different ballgame.
Totally. And, you know, I did it before, though, because when I started off in fitness, I was really pigeonholed into fitness, which was the irony being that I'd gone from being the scarred again, always sort of like the chubby, funny smoker girl at school, to getting to being like this really fitnessy girl.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that took off. And then I was pigeonholed into that personality that I'd only really occupied for the past year.
Did you lose friends at the time as a result of that? Like people that you've changed?
No, not at all, because I hadn't changed. It was just the thing that got me. Nothing had changed. I just got really lean.
Okay.
But it was the thing that got me an audience was being lean. So the part of me that everyone was interested in was like the least relevant part to who I was. It was just, I'd finally lost weight, which is a classic thing with women. It's like, oh my God, you got marginally more attractive. Let's like listen to you talk now. It was basically like that. It was like, oh, you're thin. What have you got to say? So that was like, then once that had been going on for a bit, I then like started the podcast. And then again, that was sort of like, pivoted my Instagram content to more sort of like lifestyle-y and fashion and stuff. And that took me years. And I probably only just got to the point where everyone was sort of like settling into this being about books and fashion and stuff. And now I'm like, okay, so now I want to be a comedian.
Yeah.
And it's...
I think it's great though. It's like you're just evolving, experimenting, trying different things.
It's literally... I was talking to a friend about this the other day and I was saying how I think there's like two types of people. And there's the kind of people that are like really sort of do things by the book, and they're like, right, I'm going to do my degree and then I'm getting a master's and I'm going to do the internship, and that's like one route, and that like is tried and tested and it works. Mm-hmm. And then there's people like me and a lot of my friends who we're just sort of like throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
And sometimes stuff does work, and sometimes it just means that, like with adulting, that was like the 50th project of things that I can't even remember what I was thinking about doing before, but I had so many of these like what I thought was sort of like moments where I was like, oh my God, I'm going to do this. And then it was just that podcast idea, which I also... no planning went into it. I just was like, right, I'm going to record it now. And I just bought a microphone and just had people around my flat, and the sound quality was awful. And I sort of like worked out, which I think is the best way to do something. Sorry, totally. Can I keep this is such a long story. I feel bad that I'm talking so long, but I'll finish off this. In the book that I just read, Atomic Habits by James Clear. Again, it's like I'm sponsored. I'm not. You can if you want. There's a bit where he talks about you can either be in motion or in action. And he was like, we spend a lot of our time in motion, which is when you're like setting up meetings and planning and like researching, and it makes you feel like you're doing the thing.
Okay.
So I don't know, like imagine, say I was talking about wanting to go into comedy, but I never actually did a gig. And I'm just like, oh, I'm going to find out like who the best promoters are. And I'm going to look up like who's doing this, whatever. That's called being in motion. But being in action would just be like, I'm just going to go and do a gig.
Yeah.
And up until this point, I've always done the thing where I've never been that worried. I've never really thought about it. I've just been like, oh, I'm going to start a podcast, or oh, I'm going to do whatever. Because I don't really know why, because I just wasn't, it's not because I was doing it the right way. I just didn't really think that there was any due process that I should have done.
Yeah.
And in a funny way, it's worked out better for me. But as you said, because I have an audience, it gets harder and harder to take those risks because everyone is watching you.
There's a freedom that comes with those, with sort of forays into different areas at, you know, an earlier stage. But also there's a sense of naivety that goes with that.
Yeah.
And the naivety is a beautiful thing, because that's what makes you think, oh, do you know what? I can do this.
Just go for it. Yeah.
And then once you enter that world, you're like, oh, wow, there's a whole another ball game here.
Yeah.
But I think in a sense you need that sort of like naivety to just sort of try something.
Exactly. And I think it's a bit of both. I mean, obviously it's not, you can't think that you can just walk into anything and be the best at it. But I think that we're all really hindered by, this is why I'm saying like I'm not perfectionist, because for years I've always been like, oh, I'm such a perfectionist, just it's such a thing to say. And I was like, actually I'm not. I do stuff all the time that is so not half-assed, but like when I take a picture on Instagram, I'll take it on that day and I'll put a filter on it, I just post it. There's no like real sort of, I'm not like, I don't have like a cachet of pictures to post, and like nothing is planned. It's very like off the cuff. And that's not because I'm good. It's because I'm like, I'm very spontaneous to my detriment, as in like, I want to do them now. So I just do things.
Yeah.
And in a funny way, I think that's almost like worked out for me. But on the other hand, you don't want to be like so cocksure that you think you deserve something before you do. I think it's more just about realizing that you're never going to get it perfectly, and there's nothing wrong with like figuring out on the job.
Yeah.
Because if I'd spent years planning that podcast and thinking about all the guests I wanted to get and everything, it probably wouldn't have started it now.
Oh, totally. I'm definitely a culprit to that sometimes. It's like perfectionism is a killer of creativity.
Yeah.
Sometimes you've just got to think, fuck it, I'm going to just do this and just share.
But then at least when you do stuff, it is probably better than when I do it.
Well, I don't know about that. What do you do then? I mean, you've talked about how your work is play and mm-hmm. your play is work. So then I don't know if this question is redundant, but what do you do to relax and unwind outside of your projects you've got going on work-wise?
Well, it's annoying because of Instagram, not annoying, but everything does sort of become work. So reading used to be really relaxing, but now that I do my book post, it still is relaxing, but there's sort of like a bit of a time limit on it. Cause I'm like, right, I need to, the minute I finish a book, I start another one. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm like, I've got to have a weekly thing. So I do read to relax, but also in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, what's the review of this book going to be?
Okay.
And then I'm really into food and wine. Like my most favorite thing to do is like find a new restaurant in London, have that. It's amazing. But then I'll post about it. So then there's that again going on.
Okay.
Probably just like going out with my friends. I really think that's it. And just being like idiots and dancing. I'm so bad at dancing, but I love it so much. I can't even explain. Like we went to Scotland on a girls trip for my friend's birthday the other week. So my friend's parents live in Scotland.
Okay.
And we would just be up till 5 a.m. just dancing to like shit music. And her mum was like, what are you guys doing? We're like, we'd be sweating. You know, when you go to like a disco and you're 9 and they turn the lights on and your hair's like wet and you're drenched. That's what me and my friends are like when we go out. It's just like constant dancing. So probably that, which is it's good as well because you sweat out all the alcohol.
Oh, yeah. I'm just quite a sweaty person in general.
I think I've got sweat patches.
Yeah, I
notice them?
No, I didn't notice them. I was just going to say, like, I walk down the street and I'm sweaty.
I'm sweaty
very
now.
Sweaty man. I
always get a Sula, sweaty upper lip alert.
Oh, I didn't know that was the term for that.
It's from Wild Child, which is an amazing film. You should watch it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll check that out. Okay. Talking of books then,
yes.
Are any books, I know you talked about Atomic Habits, but are there any books in particular that stand out that have had a major impact to you in your life in any shape or form? Doesn't have to be work related.
So, well, there's certain ones that just stay with you. And I guess also more recently, but Utopia for Realists I read recently by Rutger Bregman, which is an amazing book. And it's basically just talking about how could we make the world better for the majority, like for more people. So it's a lot about like universal basic income and why, like, it's very like anti-conservative. It's just, he's an amazing, I guess he's like a philosopher. And it's kind of a really simple, incredible, positive look on human nature. So he's written a second book actually called Humankind, which is all about sort of like debunking, you know, the Lord of the Flies idea that like if you left loads of kids on an island, they'd all like kill each other because we're all deep down, we're sort of like savages. Mm-hmm. And he was like, did that actually happen, where these kids actually were like sort of stranded off an airplane and they were left on an island in like 1970 something, I can't remember what it was, and they just like formed a coalition, like all helping each other with cooking. Like that's not, he was like, we've been so taught because of capitalism that we're inherently evil, that we want to get to the top of the rat race, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, that's not actually how we're built psychologically or physiologically, and if we knew that, everyone would kind of be nicer. So he's just a really nice, he's got a very positive outlook, and I actually spoke to him on the podcast, which was, I don't know why he said yes, because he's like quite famous. I don't think he knew who I was, but anyway, that was amazing. So yeah, Utopia for Realists is incredible. And then another book which is just a really nice fiction book, it's called City of Girls by Elizabeth Gilbert of the Eat Pray Love fame.
Yes, I read her book, Big Magic.
I need to read that. Is it good?
I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
That's something I've actually been thinking about reading. But yeah, this is just about sort of like flapper girls in New York. And it's just, it's lots of glitz and glamour. And it's one of the best. But I read it and it's, you know, sometimes you read a novel and it just completely takes you away. Yeah. And it was like, I haven't been that absorbed in a book, I don't think, since I read like Harry Potter. Like the intensity of the like, oh, I just was so excited to read it. So yeah, City of Girls.
Okay, great. And do you find when you're reading fiction, because essentially, you know, when you read fiction, you watch TV, they're both forms of escapism. Mm. But do you feel, I don't know, a feeling of a less sense of guilt when you're reading as opposed to watching something like Love Island?
No, I love Love Island.
Yeah, I said that on purpose because I knew.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with Love Island. No, I don't. The only thing is you sleep so much better. So I'll try and do it where we will. So I am in a routine by proxy of the fact that my boyfriend's in such a routine. But we will try and if we're going to watch something, we'll watch something from 8 till 9 and then we'll get into bed and read from 9 till 10.
Wow.
So that the last thing you do before bed is not on a screen.
Every day you do this?
Yeah, try to, yeah.
What about the blue ray glasses? You know those glasses?
Yeah, I do actually wear glasses, but I don't think mine have the blue thing. But it's more, yeah, that probably would help. But it's more, I do think you get into a deeper, like nicer sleep.
I agree.
Have you read Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker?
No, but I've got insomnia, so I should read it.
You should read it. It's really, really good. And he also talks about the nap thing, by the way. I felt so vindicated. He was like, we're designed to have three sleeps a day because of our circadian rhythms. So, you know, at 3 p.m. you start to feel a bit, where is it, 3 now? I don't know what time it is, but
yeah,
you start to feel a bit snoozy. Yeah. That's literally your body clock is telling you to go to sleep.
Interesting.
It's really, that's another.
I love a nap. Yeah. I love a nap. But it's 20 minutes has got to be the cutoff. Any more than that, I'm all over the place.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, I mix and match. I think 20 minutes to half an hour is a good one. When you accidentally sleep longer, that's when you wake up and feel like, it's very stressful. But some people don't like napping.
No, I know.
Could never be me.
Very controversial. No.
I could sleep anywhere. If you were like, have a sleep on the floor now, I would just go sleep.
And my girlfriend's the same. She's a good sleeper.
Yeah. I could sleep on a long haul flight, 18 hours straight. No problem.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah, absolutely no issue. And then I'm still tired all the time. So don't know what that is. But no, I don't feel good about watching TV because I think that I'm a snob about wine. It's something I really need to. I'm not actually a snob, but I've just learned too much. But when with things like
too much.
I have, you there's a certain threshold you go too far. There was a wine we used to love called The Governor that you can get on Majestic. It's like £6 a bottle. It was like my favorite wine ever. And then we hadn't had it for a few months.
Wine?
No, it's a red wine.
It's a red wine. Okay.
And it was like, I was like, oh my God, I could literally drink this. It's the nicest thing.
Okay.
And we went a few months not having it and we've been trying to like experiment a bit more with different wines. And then we had it and I was like, it tastes like ketchup. It was so upsetting and now I don't like it anymore.
Because your palate's
because I like understood and it just tasted really sugary and sweet and I was like, oh no, I've just made myself, well, I guess I'm going to have to earn more money because some wines extortionate.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But no, sorry, with TV and thinking, no, because it's just entertainment. I think that's so annoying, you know, people like, I think maybe it's slightly better for your brain to read a book, but Netflix is the dream.
It is. Yeah, I can get lost in that for hours on end. Final question for you. Yeah. I very much enjoyed talking to you and I've got a lot more questions here, but our time is limited. What does the idea of balance mean to you or not? I say or not because it might not be something that you believe in.
No, I do believe in balance. It's so funny because that was so the buzzword of when I started fitness on Instagram. Everything's okay. Like getting a balance. I think it's, but I used to think that balance was sort of like the thing that we spoke about before, so like being really in a routine and having everything in order. I actually think balance is, it's a lot more ebby and flowy than that. So it could be that one week you're actually like really off your game and you've been out with your friends and you're feeling a bit low and not everything's going that well, but then the next week everything's better. I kind of would look at balance more now on a monthly basis, whereas I used to think of it much more rigorously and be a lot more stressed and more anxious about it and feeling like, oh my God, I'm not, all my ducks aren't in a row. Whereas if I look back over my whole, like, well, my career trajectory especially, it goes upwards, down, sideways, but you know, the line is eventually going up. I feel like in terms of I'm getting closer to what I want to be doing, but it's never just been like chomp, or like, so I think balance to me is always knowing just when to, okay, this is how I'm going to say it to put it better. So I in therapy we're talking about self-care and stuff, and my therapist was like, there's times when you just gotta let yourself relax and like, you know, look after yourself, be kind to yourself, like treat yourself. Then I got to the point where I was just constantly sort of like, oh my God, you just self-care. And I was self-caring to the point where it was like redundant. And I went to her and she was like, no, that's not what I meant. She was like, sometimes self-care is when like, get the fuck out of bed. Like, so I think it's that balance of knowing when you need something. That's what balance means to me.
Okay.
When to kick yourself out the bum and when to like, let yourself chill.
Good answer.
Is it? I don't know if it was.
No, I think it's a good answer. Okay. Yeah, no one's, I don't think anyone's answered that in terms of looking at it from a month by month basis.
Okay, fab. So, well, we can patent that and I'll
you're a revolutionary.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And only it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for coming on, for your time. Where is best for people to follow you? And you've got is it a wine club? Is it the book club coming up? I've mispronounced, I've butchered that. I'm gonna say it again. is it the wine club or the book club? Because it's a combo of both, isn't it? You've got an event coming up in July.
I have July? You mean September? Well, it's August now.
God blimey.
So I have.
It's great to be able to control the edit, isn't it?
Are you going to go again? You have
let's
to leave
go again.
That in.
No, but I will keep it in. I will keep it in. Don't worry, because you've got to be able to make fun of yourself. That was going to be the soundbite
okay.
of the episode. Over to you, Anoni.
So I have a book club coming up on the 3rd of September. Unfortunately, that is sold out, but I'm hoping to be hosting
it's not
them.
Is it? I mean, it's good. It's sold out.
They're not that big an event, though, because it's quite intimate. So, but I do those every month. Well, I will be again now after the pandemic. So I post about those on my Instagram page, which is my name.
Okay. This is Albright.
Oh, Annie. That's the Albright.
Yeah.
Then I did do an evening with wine women, which might be what you're thinking, but it's my first. Now, I shouldn't actually say that because I can't believe I did this, but I basically was like, fuck it, I'm just going to do an hour of stand-up, see how that goes.
You did an hour of stand-up?
I just did an hour of stand-up the other week at Mortimer House. It was fun, but I just don't know why. I called it an evening with wine women. We had wine tasting and I did an hour of stand-up.
Wow.
It was quite fun.
It was impromptu.
No. Like, I planned to do an hour, but it was like, I basically, this is where the influencer thing is like weird. So I can do an event at a really nice venue, but I'm not technically, I don't know who I think I am to be doing an hour. But because it's like my Instagram audience, I sort of do that. It's like for them. And then I go and do like the 5 minute gigs for my comedy, like
so
learning.
So the material is not the material you would do at a comedy club. It'd be, it's
oh
more
no,
catered
it,
to
it is the same material, but I just mean like, who does an hour? I do need to be doing an hour, but I just thought I'd give it a go. And it was really fun and I enjoyed it. So that was at Mortimer House. And I had a guy at Mortimer House giving everyone a wine tasting.
Great.
And that was really fun.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Okay.
It was good.
All right. So I will be at the next event in July.
Perfect. 2022.
Yep. Fantastic. Cool. I look forward to seeing you there and seeing your 2 hour stand.
Yeah.
Where's the best for people to follow you and keep up with what you're up to?
Oh yeah, so I'm just Anoni on Instagram. I think I'm Anoni Forbat on Twitter, and then you can go and listen to the back catalogue of my podcast, which is called Adulting with Anoni Forbat. So over 100 episodes, and then I guess watch this space. I don't know what I'm going to be doing, but more comedy. Actually, I'm doing comedy on the 2nd of September. Or the 3rd, Carnaby Street are doing like a festival.
Okay,
and my friend who's a comedian, Grace Campbell, we do shows together and we'll be doing stuff. It's just open air, you can just come along to Carnaby Street.
Great.
So that'd be fun.
Anoni, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Perfect.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.